Thanks for listening to Resume on Podcast One.
There are 120,000 unsolved murder cases in America.
It was the next day that I found out from my parents what had happened, that my sister was killed.
Each one is called a cold case.
Sometimes you have to look really closely to find the evidence.
Damn it, I killed her.
Damn it, I killed her.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
Garcia is walking into the home of a real monster.
I was nervous. I realized what kind of person I was dealing with.
It's a goosebump moment.
Download new episodes every Tuesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Oh yeah, and it's Resume. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Chris Loxamana, and this is the show where we talk about resumes. That's right, just like the title says, the jobs that people have. And I bring in just incredible people. Today is no different. I have Matt Siegel here.
Hey man, what's up?
Hey,
how are you, Chris?
Welcome. I'm doing well. So I guess your resume right now says that you are a mixologist. Is that the word that you like to use?
It's a word that people use.
It is a word that people use.
So it's not the easiest thing to try and describe, so I'm not going to fight it.
I think it's a more common thing now. I mean, maybe 10, 15 years ago, it would have been, you know, oh, I'm not really sure, you know, what that is, or, but I see a lot of it these days, especially like high end crafted cocktails have been a big thing recently. And like every bar I go to now just has their signature cocktails that are, you know, have no less than 10 ingredients.
We can talk about how to not do that.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
That's real important.
I definitely want to talk about booze and just your thoughts on just where we are right now with drinks. So I like going out. I like having a cocktail.
Yeah, of course.
I like trying different things. Actually, you know, I rarely get things that I don't like. And that might just be a choice. Like, I choose not to be picky about that kind of stuff. But I do want to hear your thoughts on where you think we're heading with all that, too. So we'll get into that. You actually have a really cool history. Whereas I guess the more common route, including myself included, is I started working in restaurants and in hospitality. And then I left to go do something else. Because I guess it just wasn't really for me. Like, I still respect it and I love it. And I even think I could, if I walked into a restaurant now and took up a serving job or something, I could hang just because I learned so much from it. But you actually found...
It's like riding a bike, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but you found your niche.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, no other industry or job, like I've done retail, I've done this, I've never learned how, or more skills than I did from working hospitality.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially dealing with people.
It's reading people.
Which is like everything.
Yeah. Reading people is just an incredible skill that I think everybody needs to learn, and you learn it the most, I think, working in that industry.
Absolutely.
Especially
behind a bar where you're like face to face with people. There's no hiding. You're not hiding in a kitchen. You're not, you know, like,
yeah, they're
not
dealing
the chefs
with
are
you.
Hiding. I'm not saying that, but like, you got to look someone in the face and,
yeah,
you know, deal with them.
Yeah, you can't go, oh, you know, let me get that person. No,
yeah.
they're talking to you, and you're representing your business or the business that you're working for. So we'll get into that too. But first, let's just talk about your resume too. How did you get to becoming a professional mixologist? Because
I guess it's kind of what you would call backwards, right? Where a lot of people like work in, let's call it the service industry, right?
Yeah,
because they like need a job, and there's a million restaurants all over
million
the world.
Restaurants, and you can, great money.
Yeah, it's good money. It's like not the steepest learning curve, depending on where you're working, you know. And like, you can get in there and do it. You can work in the morning, daytime, nighttime. Like, it's kind of open to whatever, you know. So a lot of people do that because they would just, you know, want some steady income while they're pursuing whatever their passion is or their art form or whatever you want to call it. Right? That's like what you would call the traditional route.
Yeah.
I sort of went backwards around that. I was very fortunate to be able to make a living as an artist for a long time in the record industry, which is, as you know, we all know, living here in Los Angeles is a wild, untamed beast.
Oh, yeah. What were you doing?
I was more on the artist side, a songwriter, record producer. Toured all over the world as a DJ as well, and that's
crazy.
That term, you know, along with mixologist, is like one of those like weird phrases that
I hear more and more these days.
It's just like, oh, you're a DJ or you're a mixologist, and it's like we can talk about that later, but semantics, you know. I co-owned a recording studio in Santa Monica for a while. I wrote a lot of music for like TV commercials. That's kind of where my bread and butter was. I was sort of found that niche or that lane before that was like the only way to make money, you know?
That's great money too.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I was always just like interested in that. I liked writing like weird, cool, quirky little songs, you know?
Yeah. We use extreme music for this company, which is like, yeah, it's a production library that they do, you know, commercials and TV shows and all that too. So yeah, I'm familiar with all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I enjoy doing that stuff. Like writing songs for artists and doing all that kind of stuff is great, but like, I found a fun niche that way where I could like be artistic and, you know, not have to like sell my soul, let's call it.
Oh yeah. You could still kind of do your own thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I understand what that means. You know what that
So, you know, I was doing that for a really long time, but I've always just had this really, really deep passion for food and beverage. Like as a consumer, I just love to eat and love to drink, and you know, like,
oh yeah, who doesn't, right?
Yeah, right, of course. And I think you know, I think a fair amount of it, now that I look back, stems from like being fortunate to travel a lot and like going to eat at weird restaurants all over the world and like stay in crazy hotels and like have this like sort of traveling lifestyle.
What year range was this?
This is probably like most of that was like 08 to 11.
So like Yelp wasn't really a thing, was it?
Yelp wasn't really a thing. Like the whole like online food community wasn't like popping. Like I didn't know about it. I only knew about what I knew about. Yeah. You know, like I wasn't going to places necessarily like seeking out like the 3 Michelin restaurant or the San Pellegrino top, blah blah blah. Like I didn't really know about that at that point. My head was like in this music world. I just knew that I liked food.
Yeah.
And I like enjoyed really cool hotels and like the idea of like being hospitable. I've always liked that. I've always liked having people over to my house and like cooking for them and making drinks for them, even when I didn't know what I was doing, because I just enjoyed it.
And it's kind of cool since you've traveled so much too, like, oh, I'm going to Atlanta for the weekend, and you can actually say, oh, you got to check out this place, you know, things like that.
Yeah,
too.
Now I'm fortunate that, like, yeah, sure, the internet exists and everyone can look up anything about anything or anywhere or whatever restaurant, but like having a network in that world really makes it fun. And it's really like this sort of family community thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to go to this place in this city. And it's like, oh, I know that person who knows this person. And it's sort of like this really fun connected dots, but in like a positive way, where a lot of times, you know, it's just about giving, right?
Yeah.
You want to like go somewhere and people, you're just like, oh man, you got to like try this new thing we're working on, or this and that, and this person, you know, it's like, it's all about sharing.
Yeah, that's, I think, the best places to go to, and like the people that run the restaurants, the chefs, everybody, like if you're really good, they know really good people and they're cool with everybody. Yeah. And and it becomes like a family thing, like, because, you know, they all worked in the trenches together, they
exactly.
all did all that together. And so you can really, I totally believe that, like if you're good, and you'll know other good places to go to.
For
too. Everybody's
sure.
in on
yeah.
it.
And I think that point about the trenches is a great point, because like they know, oh, if you're from a restaurant too, like they know that you know how hard they're working and like what's really going on and like how intense it can be. And so they want to be able to like share that, the goodness that comes from that with you. Where, you know, the other side of that, like in the record industry, it's not always really like that. You know, it's a lot of like what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine.
Yeah,
you know, like everyone's hands are in everyone's pockets, and like I just, you know,
it's a little dirty. Yeah,
I just didn't really love that. Like I just like didn't have to enjoy, like I
see
that, that was a strong impetus in me, like wanting to really change. We really want to get down to like the root of it. That's like, that played a big part.
I see that a lot, because, you know, I now work in the entertainment industry, and I'm totally turned off by all that. And it feels dirty. It feels weird. Like it doesn't like it. Whereas in the restaurant industry, yeah, everybody is just loving and just like, yeah, come here, come over.
Yeah.
Oh, I know the guy. Drop my name. Let him know that I sent you. Blah blah blah. And you know, everyone just wants to take care of each other. Whereas here, it doesn't feel like everyone has your back as it does with like restaurants.
You kind of find your little crew or whatever, your little group, your little family. Where in hospitality, I don't know. At least I'm fortunate to have fallen into like a big family. You know, and I feel really lucky in that world. And so I want to like continue to share that and give that.
So how'd you make that transition then? Because, I mean, it sounds like you're doing pretty good, you know, making the music for the commercials. And as I said, it that's good money. And you do have your artistic freedom, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, why?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. I'll tell a funny story about that in a minute. Remind me.
Yeah.
Of when I first got to New York. It really happened, like, honestly, like, I might as well have just knocked on the back door. You know, I might as well have just, like, shown up and been like, hey, like, how about me? Like, I want a job, you know? And that seems like such a crazy way to do things nowadays. Like, no one does that.
Yeah.
The real, real true story, which I've told once or twice, is a very close friend of mine was living in New York for a long time. He has since moved back to Los Angeles. But he was always super into food and drinks and all that kind of stuff, too. And he and I were, like, the two, like, we were each other's, like, food buddies before there were food buddies, you know? Like, he's a doctor, I mean, he's a surgeon, and I was a, you know, DJ, and we were just, like, good, like, lifestyle-wise, couldn't be more different,
sure.
Right? But
you,
like,
guys come together for
but
that.
We always had, we're always such close friends and had such respect for what the other one did, even though I didn't understand why he respected me, because, like, he's a freaking surgeon, you
know? Yeah.
But when I, like, there'd be times where, like, I'd be on tour somewhere and there'd be, like, this cool restaurant there, and he'd come meet me and we'd go eat there, you know, and hang out for a little bit in whatever city, and then vice versa, he'd be somewhere for, like, a conference or something. Like, I remember going to, he had a conference in Chicago, and this was probably, like, 6 or 8 years ago, and you know, he was like, yo, I'm going to go to Chicago. We should, like, get a reservation, go eat at Alinea, go do drinks at the Aviary. That, you know, like, right when that restaurant, like, was, like, really starting to come into its own and really becoming, like, a big deal. I was like, yeah, dude, that sounds great. So, like, we would go and, like, take these adventures. So he knew that I always, like, secretly wanted to get into this industry, even though, like, I was very happy and, like, thrilled. Like, I was living off music. Like, that's the dream, right?
Yeah.
But so he would, like, periodically just, like, send me links to things. He's like, hey, this restaurant's hiring. He's like, you should come to New York, you know, if you want to get in this industry. Like, New York's where it's at. And, like, it's true.
Oh, so he already called you out, like, oh, you want to work.
Oh, yeah, he knew. He would just, he would, like, fire off emails to me of, like, postings online. It's like, so-and-so restaurant's hiring, so-and-so restaurant's hiring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he was, like, that push, right?
He saw a little passion, a little spark in there, and just thought, let's light it. Let's see what we can do.
And, like, his secret motive, which he probably doesn't want me to talk about, was, like, he wanted to own a restaurant too, but he can't do it. Like, he's a surgeon. He's like, yeah, but, like, if you do it, then maybe, like, I could invest in it and we could be, like, partners in it, but you'd run it, because he's literally, like, the head of dermatological surgery at Columbia. Like, that dude's not quitting his job to, like, go work in a restaurant, you know?
Sure, that makes sense.
But
I love that.
Yeah, but so he just was, like, trying to, like, fuel my fire for me, you know? And after multiple times him sending stuff to me, I'd be like, dude, like, I live in Los Angeles, I work in Los Angeles, I'm from here, like, I work in Hollywood, essentially.
Things are going,
like,
well, yeah.
I'm good. Like, I'm not going to New York. Like, that's never gonna happen. Like, just chill, you know? Eventually he didn't stop, and he sent me a thing to interview as a host at 11 Madison Park, and this is in 2013. And I knew what 11 Madison Park was, clearly. Like, it's not, you know, as massive as it is right now, you know, 4 years ago, but it was still a very, very big deal. Anyone who was, like, into food and restaurants, like, clearly knew what was going on there. And he knew that, like, I was into that spot. So I was like, you know what? Fine. I'll come to this one interview just to shut you up, just so you'll stop sending me stuff. Like, I don't want to hear it anymore. And, like, I hadn't been to New York in a while. I was like, whatever. In my mind, it was, like, an excuse to go hang out in the city for a weekend. Like, we'll go hang out. We'll go eat at a bunch of places. Like, we'll just chill out in the city, go to some cool bars. I'll go to this stupid interview just to shut you up, but we'll get to kick it. So set this whole thing up, like, send off a, like, he literally sent me, like, the link to, like, apply online to just, like, be a host. And I was, like, in the back of my mind, I was like, I guess I could be a host. I don't know how to, I guess I can just, like, smile and say hi to people. I don't know, be charming. And,
yeah, that's,
like,
that's usually the entry level position of any restaurant.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, let's go do that. So I sent off this email and they responded, and I was able to set up an interview, which already was shocking to me, given, like, I knew nothing, and I wasn't trying to front. Like, I told him, I was like, I've never worked in a restaurant. I, like, have no credentials, you know? I, like...
Well, you had no experience.
None.
Whatsoever.
Truth is, like, one summer in college, I worked at, like, a cheesesteak place.
That doesn't count.
So, no, it doesn't count. I even said that to him. I was like, I'd tell you about this cheesesteak place I worked at, but, like, that's not a... It's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that might count against you.
Yeah, exactly. that place for sure would have counted against me. So whatever, I go and do this interview with a lovely woman named Mandy, and I give Mandy all the credit for like seeing some potential in me. We go through this whole interview, and she's like, during the whole thing, she keeps saying to me, she's like, I don't understand what you're doing here. Like, I show her my resume, which just has like a bunch of like music credits, you know, which
that's
like,
a random resume to get to become like a host for a restaurant.
It's just like all these things. And she's like, I'm looking at your resume and it seems like you're doing fine. Like, I don't understand. Like, just so we can be clear here, you're going to start at the bottom. You're going to make way less money than I'm assuming you're making right now. I don't get it. You're like not the normal person we see here. Usually it's like a 23-year-old person straight out of college or like culinary institute or like some wannabe actor or something to just like make some money.
You must be mistaken.
Right. And I was like, no, I get it. Like, I'm aware of that. Like, I have no ego. I'm not expecting to like walk in and manage a place for, you know, 150 grand a year. Like, I'm very aware that's not happening. She's like, all right, well, how about this? I feel like you should meet our GM. I feel like you're just like so different. He'd be, you know, upset if he didn't at least meet you. I was like, great. That sounds awesome.
Sure.
So she's like, I'm going to email you both when you leave. See if you can set up something for either later tonight or maybe tomorrow morning. So we touch base and he couldn't do anything till the next day. So I meet him the next day and I'm set to fly out back to Los Angeles that night. So I go and meet this guy for the interview. Who is younger than me. He's the general manager of 11 Madison Park, and he's younger than me. And I'm walking in just to be a host. And he says the same thing to me. He's like, and he looks super young too. he's just like, what are you doing here? Like straight up, he's just like, what are you doing here? Why do you want to be here? You know, and I tell the nice story about how like, I know about this place and I want to be in the industry. And like, you know, there's this whole backstory, you know, about Miles Davis and 11 Madison Park and like, my whole game was like, I don't know anything about restaurants, but I know about Miles Davis. So I just like trying to like steer the conversation towards Miles. And let's talk about jazz and like, you know.
Yeah, I love Miles Davis.
Oh, man. I mean, he's, you know,
get his autobiography if you haven't read it, everybody.
I mean, come on.
Miles.
Even the movie was pretty good. So we're having this talk and he keeps saying that those same lines to me over and over and over. And he was like, look, man. I like you. I think you're really interesting. How about this? He's like, next time you're in New York, shoot me an email. We can set up a trail for you. You can come in and like trail one of our guys for the night and see if there's something you actually really want
to
do.
I love how they're kind of convincing you to not do it.
Yeah, they're trying really hard to like talk me out of it. They're like, dude, your life seems dope. Like, what are you doing?
You should be eating here.
Yeah, like they were legit talking me out of it. They're like, you're not. You don't want to be here. You're going to make no money. You're going to start at the bottom. Like, they're like telling me all the things that like,
I kind of agree with them right now. Like, this is weird.
Yeah, it was definitely weird. But I just like, honestly, like it's going to sound like some weird hippie shit, but like I walked in that building. I was like, yeah, I knew. I just knew.
It fit. Yeah. So you shadowed.
So he was like, yeah, look, next time you're in New York, just let me know. We'll set something up. And I was like, well, I'm here now. And I could tell that's kind of what he wanted to do. It's very New York. It's like, okay, let's go. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah. Ready to go.
So he was like, great. And he looks me up and down. And he's like, I brought one suit, you know, because I came for one interview. And I wear like a blue suit and like brown shoes because I like that color combination. You know,
It
looks good.
It does look good.
And he looks me up and down. He's like, you got black pants and black shoes, right? I was like, nope. I have brought one suit because I came to New York for one interview to interview with you guys. He's like, that's great. There's Fifth Avenue. Go buy yourself black shoes and black pants. We're going to do the trail tonight. I was like, oh, these guys are for real.
Sure.
Okay, great. So I like went back to my hotel, booked my hotel another night, pushed my flight to the next day, bought black pants, bought black shoes. Now I'm like deep in this. I'm like, well, shit. Now like, now I got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I just dropped a couple $100. Like, let's make this right. So I come back that night, and he pairs me up with another guy named Matt from Southern California, and literally says to me, he's like, Matt from Southern California? You go with Matt from Southern California. You guys will probably understand each other. That was what they said to me. So I was like, all right, that seems cool. So I'm trailing this guy, Matt, who's now become like one of my like all-time closest friends. He grew up in Orange County. And I'm like trailing him the whole night, just like walking through this. And I like, to reiterate, like I've never worked in any restaurant, any sort of restaurant. Now I'm inside of this like machine. This place is like literally it like the best way I can describe it is like the inside of like a beautifully crafted like Swiss watch. Like every piece is working perfect. Like it's like a ballet. It's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what the hell is going on. I'm just so far beyond over my head, but just like trying to keep it cool, like ask questions and to not sound like an idiot. Like I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's hard to like learn while staying as out of the way as you can.
Yeah. It's like just don't fuck it up. Don't run into anyone. Just shut up and be invisible, you know? But like during that process, all of the different managers are like pulling me off and like spot interviewing me. And like, it was intense, dude. It was super intense. And then like in the back of my mind, I was like, this is like for a fucking restaurant. Like, come on, man. But I saw how they were operating and I loved that because that's how I like to operate in my life, in my like business and just like in general. Like there's precise and everything is for a reason and like there's no messing around. It's not
no wasted motions. I love that.
You know, it's not like
efficiency.
Yeah. Nothing against diners, but it's like it's not like working at Denny's. You know, it's like very, very sharp and precise. And I liked that. And that was like super exciting to me. So when I started to see that, that's what really got me motivated more than just like being in this cool restaurant in Manhattan, you know?
Yeah. I noticed that when I go out to eat at places, you can tell like what restaurants do that.
And, yeah.
Like,
you can like, tell when they care.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It shows. And there's like pride in the people that are working there. Like they are there to like give you an amazing experience,
right.
Not just like get tips.
Yeah. Not just trying to turn tables or anything like that. Yeah.
So then the end of the night comes. The GM at the time, his name is Kirk. Kirk has also become a really close friend of mine. And so Kirk pulls me into his office and he's like, hey, so I just want you to know, like, we really appreciate all the effort that you put in this. I know that, like, you were supposed to leave tonight. You, like, had to book another hotel. You moved your flight. You went and bought pants. Like, it just so you know, like, it hasn't gone unnoticed. And, like, that definitely shows a lot of character and shows a lot about you. I still don't understand what you're doing here and why you want to do this, but I can tell that you do. And I was like, yeah, man, like, I'm not messing around. I don't like throwing away $1,000 just because, like, it's like, that's not cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here because I want to be here. I'm not just killing time, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like, here's what I'll do. I got to, you know, exchange notes with the rest of the managers who spoke to you during the night, but since you did right by us, before you leave tomorrow, we'll have an answer for you either way. And I was like, that's awesome, man. Cool. All right. So now, like, this thing that I, like, came to New York for is, like, an excuse to hang out with my buddy that I really didn't care about. Like, now I really care about this. Like, and I really, like, now I really want this job. I got to see, like, the insides of this place and, like, how it really works. And, like,
yeah. I love how it was instant for you. That you,
yeah, I just knew. Yeah. I just knew instantly. I was like, yo, these guys are, like, not playing around. And I was honestly, like, getting back to the music stuff, like, I was so sick of working with people that are just, like, not reliable. You know, artists show up late for sessions. Like it's like the ultimate like hurry up and wait game is music.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, we need this spot for this commercial by 4 p.m. today, and it's, you know, you get the email at noon and you got to write a whole song in, you know, 3 hours, and then you rush and get it all done, and they're like, oh, and then you like send it in right on time, and then you don't hear back from them for
exactly.
a week.
Like, you know, out of office. We'll be back.
And it's like,
week.
Yeah, no, the production company has like another thing. And it's just like, dude, come on.
It really,
man.
I have friends.
You know
that are
all about
industry.
It.
It's so disorganized like that.
It's
just so
horrible,
wishy-washy.
Man.
Like, nobody's reliable. You can't rely on anything. Yeah.
And everyone's so like, it's their own time is all that's important. Right. And it's like, I just like, I saw the other side of that. I was like, that's how I want to work. Maybe I just got to go do this and I can, like, you know, check it out.
I love how you compare it to, like, yeah, it's like a ballet or, like, just like.
That's how it looked. That's honestly how it looked. Like, it's that beautiful. It really is. Like, it was, like, seamless.
Yeah.
You know? Everything was, like you said, like, had a purpose and was done. There was no missteps anywhere. So my next day in New York now, I, like, couldn't get a flight out till like, 9 p.m. And so I'm just, like, hanging around the city all day. And now this, like I said, like, this job I didn't really care about. Like, now I'm, like, I was, like, afraid to go on the subway because I thought I was going to miss a phone call from this place. Like, I was, like, I got to stay above ground. I need to make sure my phone is charged. Like, I want this phone call. I got to get this job, you know? So I didn't hear from him all day. And so now I'm like all stressed out or like a little deflated. Like, oh, it's like, all right, whatever. I'll just go back to LA and keep making music. Oh, boo-hoo. Like, you know, life's going to be so tough. But I'm sitting, I'll like never forget this. I'm sitting at the airport and it's like 8 p.m. about to board my flight. I get an email from Kirk. And the day that I got offered that job was the same day that they jumped from the number 10 restaurant in the world to the number 5 restaurant in the world. That day. So I get an email from the general manager of 11 Madison Park, who's younger than me, being like, hey, Matt, we just want you to know that we'd like to offer you a job at the number 5 restaurant in the world.
Crazy.
Like, fuck. Now I have to take, like, how am I going to not do this?
Yeah.
You know? So I remember, like, I was about to board the plane. And I shot a quick text to my mom. I was like, hey, mom, just so you know, I'm coming back to LA. Every time I would leave to go on tour or do travel or something, my mom always thought I was never going to come home. I don't know why. Like, but she always just thought I was just going to like fall in love with some place and just like live there. Little did she know that would be New York. I was like, hey, I'm coming back to LA. I'm out to be on a flight. I got this job. I just want you to know I'm going to be moving to New York. Like, I knew instantly.
Oh, my God.
I just knew. But then, you know, me being the, like, not smartest guy that I am, shoot an email back to Kirk being like, thank you, Kirk, so much. I'm, like, so humbled. I'm honored. This is, like, an insane, you know, honor to like, be, you know, thought of for this restaurant or however I worded it.
Yeah.
Much more eloquently than I'm speaking now.
In your head, it's not even a, oh, geez, now this process of... You know, moving. I have a business that I'm gonna have to.
No, I just knew. Like
it was done.
Yeah. I'll never forget this moment. This was a Thursday, and I'm like about to board this plane. I was like, hey, I'm honored. I'm humbled. Blah blah blah. All super nice things. I'm about to head back to LA. Let me get the weekend to think it over. I'll get back to you on Monday. And I get on the plane. And I'm just like, you idiot. Who says that to the, you know, to these guys at like the best, one of the best restaurants in the world?
I need to mold this over for a little bit.
Thanks. But, you know, meanwhile, like I'm freaking out. They probably don't give a shit. They just got number 5. They're partying all night. Like they're just happy, you know?
That's so crazy.
As soon as I get back to LA, I like shot an email and was like, hey, like I want this job. I'd love to accept it, but I need, like, can I like defer for 2 months to like, I mean, literally, yeah, changed my life, you know, and they were cool with that. You know, the response that I got, which like then like confirmed everything for me, was you can take as long as you want. Whenever you're ready, there will be a job for you here. We don't need.
Wow.
We don't need someone in your position. We don't hire people for positions. We hire people and we want you to work here with us. So whenever you're ready and you get your life together, like you're ready to leave LA, you let us know and this job's yours.
Awesome.
That's dope.
I like that.
That's dope.
That mentality, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, they wanted you.
Yeah.
They didn't need a host. They didn't want, like, they just wanted
like, they literally said, like, what they kept saying, they're like, you're different than most people. Like, we feel like you would bring something to us.
Yeah.
You know, more than just, like, running plates, you know?
Sure.
Which is the job I got offered. I didn't get offered the host job.
Food runner.
I got offered food runner, which like was like already a step up. Like I already got promoted before I even started.
Oh, man.
As far as I was concerned, I was like, oh, sweet.
That's a big day. I remember when I was went from host to food runner. Oh, that's a big day. So you just, going straight to food runner.
I went straight to food runner.
Woo!
So yeah. So then I like deferred, you know, I like 2 months in LA, like wrapped everything up, like got rid of my car, like sold some music equipment, gave a lot of it to my business partner that's like still living in a studio here in Santa Monica. Like finished up whatever projects I was working on and just like left.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're done. You haven't looked back.
No, I mean, I've now moved back to Los Angeles, but like, you know, even in the interview, like I don't go to interviews. Like my interview was like, I would like send people a CD of music, you know, like I wasn't going to like put suits on and go to a job interview.
Yeah.
You know, like in the interview with Kirk, I told him, I was like, yeah, I'm probably only going to be here for like a year. I just kind of want to like learn what you guys are doing. And then I'm going to go back to LA and open a restaurant. And now like looking back and I'm like, that's like the dumbest thing you could ever say. But I think they appreciated my honesty, you know, and I was just like, hey man, like, I just want to come learn. Like, I'll give you all of me. Like, I'm going to work harder than everybody in this building, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to give, but I'm also going to take. And I think that that sort of friendship and now relationship with everyone within that company, and like, I can, you know, talk you through like my like rise through that company has been because of that honesty and like being upfront and just being like, hey man, like, you know, talking to our owners and who like were like on a friend level rather than like,
yeah,
you know, boss employee, you know, coming from like, I never had a boss before. So I was just like, I'm just like, hey man, I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking. You know, like, we're going to keep it real with each other. And I think that that's, you know, I think some advice I can give to a lot of people where it's like, a lot of people think that there's like this like sort of mental hierarchy when you're like, your boss thinks this and I think this and I have to say this in order to, for them to think this. And it's like this weird sort of internal mental struggle.
Sure.
You know, sometimes it doesn't hurt to just kind of be upfront. Maybe sometimes, depending on who your boss is, if how hard-headed they are or whatever. But yeah, that seemed to work for me.
You know, at the end of everything, you guys are both just two human beings.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I agree. So what happens now? I mean, you get the job, you drop everything.
Yeah.
You work at this restaurant. You're running entrees and appetizers and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I got schooled, man. Like, the best way I can put it is like, that place is just like a breeding ground for knowledge. Like, you just learn so much if you're willing to soak it in and accept. Like I said, like, if you don't just show up and go to work and clock in and run some food and then like go home, like, if you really invest yourself in you know, when you get to a place of that stature in, yeah, in any sort of world, you know, like, you walk into a studio with Pharrell and like he's on the boards like doing things and you're not paying attention, then you just missed it. Like,
have a purpose.
Yeah. Like, you just missed the whole show, you know, like, go there and like learn. And I didn't really know anybody in Manhattan other than my one buddy who's like literally in the operating room all day. Like, I knew no one. So, I just spent all my time there just like learning and soaking up, like learning about food, learning about kitchen techniques, learning about ingredients, learning about seasonality, you know, because like living in California, like, we don't have seasons. Like, you want tomato, you can go get a tomato. You want, yeah, avocado, you can go get avocado. Like, whenever, doesn't matter.
Yep. Spoiled here.
Yeah. So like really understanding all of that. And then like on the beverage side, like really learning about wine. Like, I didn't know a lot about wine. I didn't really like wine. I didn't care about wine. But now like I know a ton about wine.
Really?
Yeah, and I love wine, and I prefer to drink wine over just about anything now. And same thing with, you know, tea and spirits, and I mean, literally everything. I just got schooled, but like the most important thing that I really learned was like about like actual hospitality, like steps of service, like how to treat a guest, how to take care of a guest, how to take care of like your coworkers, and how to like create this environment that is just like a place that people want to go to. And how to really, yeah, like that, that's what separates a place like that from the, you know, thousands of other restaurants, yeah, that are just like pumping out good food.
And this isn't just like a place where people want to go to as like talking about the, like the patrons, the customers, but even the staff. You, yeah, want to make it where everybody wants, yeah, to be there and everybody's there for each other. And
yeah, and everyone's on the same page. Yeah. You know, like everyone wants that place to be great. And like their guests
works
to like be happy.
Yeah, you can tell what places do that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like, you know, it's no different than like a team, like you, like the camaraderie of the Warriors. Like, you hear about, yeah, that after the postseason, right? Like the Warriors versus like the, like there's like maybe separation in the Cavs and like the Warriors play more as a team, or you hear about in whatever sport or like,
yeah,
any sort of field where it's like more than one person, you know, when you're not, you know, playing tennis, like something where there's a team aspect involved and like other people are leaning on you and you're leaning on them, and you know, everyone's trying to like hold this ball up and not let it fall.
Yeah. No, I agree. I love the team aspect. Like, you know, there are always those people like in any job, restaurants or even out here, you know, that who are more like individualists and they want to do, yeah, it all for themselves.
Yeah.
And they become entitled. They become, you know, and they actually just hurt the team because of, you know, how much they're just thinking about themselves, yeah, and how much they think they deserve or things like that. And, yeah, but then when you get the people that are just all in it together and then you realize the overall product becomes better, it's a really huge, like, skill, I think, to have. Or, yeah, I don't even know if skill's the right word, but mindset.
Yeah. And honestly, that comes from the top down. And, like, this isn't the Matt gushing on, you know, 11 Madison Park show, like, but it's real. Like, I believe in that place. And I think that, you know, the people at the top, like the leaders there, especially the two owners, you know, Will and Daniel, like, that comes from there. And I think that goes to with any sort of organization or business or sport or whatever it is. Like, you know, if your leaders aren't leading, then like, you're not, it's not going to work right.
Yeah.
You know? And so everyone gets on that same page and everyone's, you know, trying to win championships.
Yeah, I agree. And just keep that mindset going. And then I'm guessing you worked your way up to the bar then?
Yeah, so I ran food for a little bit, and then once you progress past that, you get to move into the dining room and actually like be in the dining room as opposed to just like, I mean, that place is, there's, you know, so many people working there compared to how many guests are in the dining room. Like every, you know, everything is just about taking care of. Like it's almost like one employee per two guests. Like it's almost that big of a ratio. Like Cool. It's a lot of people. And so there's, you know, being able to like just be in the dining room and like literally like pour water for people is like a privilege. Like that was the promotion, was like, oh, now you get to pour water.
Yeah.
And like, that's a crazy thing to think about. Like just pouring water, but you gotta be the best at pouring water.
Yeah.
Don't spill a fucking drop. Just pour great water.
Good, yeah.
Don't say anything. Just pour water. You can clear some plates so the other person can drop the food and then go away. And that was the promotion.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. You don't have to carry hot plates anymore. You get to pour cold water. But from that, yeah, then I progressed over to the bar, and that was when like I really like started to feel at home and when I really started to shine. And they knew that that's something that I was really interested in. And I think that that's another great thing about that company that a lot of companies can learn from, is that like allowing your employees to like show themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I also got like very involved in music, and I can talk about, you know, being deeply involved in their music program now.
At the restaurant?
I'm now the music director for that whole brand. And that's something, a job that I just created for myself.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was able to like bring these two worlds together, and like organically, you know, I didn't go there to be like, I'm going to play music at this restaurant.
Yeah. Well, you have a way if you're involving your, you know, what you care about.
Yeah.
And you're using your strengths.
Yeah. And like I said, like that was something that they wanted, is like, you know, individuals, like people that are just like, not someone who's just going to drop food and talk intelligently about it or pour perfect water. Like, you know, I had a 1 month meeting with the GM. Everyone does, like, after I'd been there for a month, and to be like, hey man, like, are you okay? Like, are you drowning? Like, how are you feeling? Like, is this still something you want to do? And like, what other things are you interested in? You know? And so I told him, I'm super interested in tea and I'm super interested in cocktails. And that's just like, cause I just have been in my personal life. And so then I ended up, you know, eventually getting to like be a deep part of the tea program and help curate the tea menu, and then move to the bar and become a bartender and like help curate the cocktail menu.
Nice.
Because that's something that I just found interesting and on my own, and they kind of cherish that.
The tea menu.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, oh, the tea list at that place is crazy, man. There's probably
There's
like probably 25 different tea offerings there.
Oh, I love that. I love tea. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Nice.
Big time. And then finding a fun way to like incorporate tea into cocktails and put those two worlds together has been really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, without getting too detailed into it, like, yeah, moving to the bar is where I really started to shine. And then I really started to like show myself. And I'd been there for, you know, a while now, and like I felt more comfortable in the system, and I felt more comfortable like inside of this restaurant, you know. And yeah, the way that the cocktail program there works is every week, literally every single week, all of the bartenders meet with the head of the beverage program, a guy named Leo, who's incredibly talented. We would meet with Leo and we would present our ideas to him.
Mm-hmm.
For the menu. So, like, we, the bar team, made the menu, which I thought was a really cool way to do it, as opposed to him just being like, I'm going to make these drinks and they're going to go on the menu. You know, I mean, he definitely still had his hand in everything, obviously, and like oversaw everything and put his, you know, his palate on things, and his palate's amazing. But so, I mean, even like pretty quickly off the bat, like, my drinks just started getting chosen. and you know, them being like, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's great. You know, which was just like so inspiring. It made me want to just make more and like do more, you know.
What do you have to take into account when making these drinks? Like, I'm guessing like what kind of like alcohol you're using.
Yeah, cost, I mean, so
things like that.
That program, which is so crazy, was like the way the root of that program was two things. It's rooted in classic cocktails and ingredients that you see on the menu. So the menu is all like tasting menu. Everything's set and it's all like very seasonal, you know. So what we would do is try and emulate flavor combinations that we would see in, you'd like a guest would see in the dining room, but then incorporate those into cocktails and use different sort of other things, but then also spirits that might emulate that certain flavor.
Oh, nice.
So that was like a really fun exercise, and like being able to like really learn and take notes from the kitchen. It's like, okay, like, you know, the way I thought about it is like they're doing all the hard work. They're really doing the recipe testing to get these flavor combinations to work. All I have to do then is reinterpret that into a drinkable version. And even sharing, you know, I would like take mise en place from the kitchen and things that they were using in the actual dish and put them in the drinks and make cocktails around them or in like, you know, different parts of ingredients. And so I like really, really started to thrive in that world and like really understanding how like food combinations, but from a beverage perspective, and then like really learning, really getting deeply schooled on like the classic like school groups of cocktails, like sours versus fizzes and daisies and old fashions, and you know, how to like make the root of a cocktail. You know, it's like when you're learning about anything, right, you got to learn your history before you can go forward, you know. And same thing like learning about music, or you're learning about like actual history, or you're learning about like you architecture, right? Like, you know, so it was the same kind of thing. So really getting schooled on like the real history of cocktail culture, and then like ingredients balancing and being able to balance bitterness and sweetness and you know, tannin and all these kind of things.
Yeah. Wow.
And then really like the cocktail program there and you know, even more so at our sister restaurant Nomad is very, very like thoughtful and very, very intense. You know, like things are measured to the like, you know, 16th of an ounce, like very, very, very precise. And they go through, you have to go through multiple tastings and multiple palates. And
that's what you like.
Yeah, I love it, right? I love that. That, like, it's not just like, oh, yeah, that's good. Like, that's not, I don't want to hear that.
It doesn't count.
It doesn't count. Like, in anything, you know? Like, you play, anytime you play a song for someone, like, oh, that's cool. What the fuck does that mean? That doesn't help.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually mean that you like it, but you're not helping me make it better, you know? You know, really learned how to, like, speak constructively. Like, take constructive criticism. You know, not be like, yeah, that drink sucks, but be like, hey, maybe it's a little too bitter. Maybe what if we tried this thing instead? Or it's a little too sour. It's a little too sweet. It's a little too this, a little too that, you know? And then like talking about like texture, and you're getting into all that kind of thing, and you're getting like really deep and like heady into drinks, like how they feel in your mouth. You know, I think that's something that not a lot of people take into consideration.
Exactly. Yeah. Texture.
And it makes all of the difference.
There's so many different elements that you have to think about when doing
it's totally
this.
Multi-sensory. And I music. Love that.
Yeah, music's all texture, I think.
I mean, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again on record, that, like, making music and making cocktails, very similar. Very similar. Especially, like, coming from, you know, I really started, you know, in DJing and, like a hip-hop background. I grew up in, like, you know, started DJing in, like, the late 90s in L.A. Like, that hip-hop was it. Hip-hop was happening here, you know? And that whole like sort of DJ battle scratch culture, you know, and then like that got me into like making beats and like sampling. So the idea of sampling to me is the exact same thing as making a cocktail, where it's like you're taking a piece of this and a little piece of that and another piece of this and then something from this, and you're putting them all together to make something.
Yeah,
and that's the same thing you're doing when you're making a cocktail. It's like a little bit of this and a little bit of that and then some of this, and then this is like the majority, and you put it together, and instead of like one goes in your ear, one goes in your mouth. You know? And you're even talking about the same thing. You're talking about flavor, right? You're talking about texture. You're talking about color. Like, you're talking about, like, frequency, right? Like, a high note, right? Something like a trumpet or, like, a crash cymbal. Or you're talking about something that's, like, really high in acid. Like, lemon juice is, like, a crash cymbal. You know what I mean? Sugar is, like, a baseline where it's, like, round and, you know, the bottom, like...
Yeah, the foundation.
Yeah, it's, like, the same kind of thing, like the backbone of your cocktail is like whatever the base spirit, the main spirit is, where that, that would be like the drums. You know, it's like, it's the same part of your brain. So I think all of that like training and like making beats and making tracks and all this kind of stuff and like the mathematics of music allowed myself to understand like the mathematics of making cocktails, because there is tons of math.
You're still a composer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I'd rather be called a composer than a mixologist. How about that?
I think you should be called a composer. I think, yeah, you technically are. Let's talk booze.
Yeah, cool.
Now, you mentioned, actually, I'm just curious right now, what's your drink? Like, what's your go-to?
I mean, right now when it's like 92 degrees outside?
Like, if you went to a bar tonight.
If I went to a bar tonight, realistically, like, this is going to sound like a cop-out, but like a Campari and soda.
Okay.
I just love Campari and like bitter things, and I also really, really like club soda. Like I like drinking like highballs. I like drinking like pretty light, like
refreshing.
Yeah, like a bottle of warm whiskey when it's 90 degrees out.
Yeah,
like, that doesn't seem too attractive to me.
We have a bottle of scotch in the studio from the last
yeah.
show.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it out loud. I really appreciate the hospitality, Chris. Right when I walked in, Chris is like, "Hey man, you want some scotch?" I was like, "Absolutely not."
Yeah. Well, it was here. I felt like it would be rude.
No,
if I didn't
I trust me, it's appreciated. but yeah, I mean, I usually, even when it's cold out, which it really rarely is here, I drink pretty light. I very much enjoy like having a drink versus like getting drunk.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I love dark rum and whiskey and you know boozy kind of dark things. But for the most part, yeah, like I drink like lots of like fortified wines and. Like, yeah, Campari and soda is like go to everywhere. It's like really hard to mess it up.
And yeah, two, I like that. Yeah.
It's easy and it's yummy and it's light.
Yeah, it's really hard to mess up. I mean, you could go anywhere, order an old fashioned, like a whiskey sour or something, and you know, half the places will make it with egg whites and the other half won't. And like, you know,
and who knows how fresh that lemon juice is.
Exactly.
And then you can get super nerdy about what kind of sugar they're using or how, like, you know, all
do
these
kind
of
variables. Do you get nerdy about that?
Do
you consider yourself like a snob or anything?
No, I sure hope not. I sure hope I never come off like that. Like, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to be like trying to coach the bartender through making my drink for me when he's behind the bar. Like, I'd never want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I like to go to places and just like try their drinks, because like I'm still curious. Like, I know a lot of bartenders like don't drink cocktails. Like, I'm still curious. Like, I came into this because like I loved drinking cocktails and spirits and I wanted to learn about it, and I still do. That being said, yeah, like I do prefer to drink wine, just cause like I still enjoy learning about it, and like, you know, learning about wine is such like a deep rabbit hole.
It really is. I actually have yet to take part in that. I mean, I've done a couple of tastings, things like that, but I'm still at that point where it's just, you know, I'll know if it's either I like it or I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that right now.
I'm actually going to a wine tasting after this. A friend invited me to like a all rosé tasting. And I'm saying on record, I love rosé.
Go on record. Yeah,
pink things
fine.
In a glass, like, I'm all about it.
Campari soda rosé.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Sun's out, I want something pink. Like, let's keep it real.
Yeah, what are some things that's happening in cocktail culture right now that you're just thinking, oh my God, what have we come to?
The word mixology.
Yeah.
A mixologist. I think that it's like, I mean, you know,
I don't like that
hand,
word either.
On one hand, like, maybe, you know, it's just like it's so everywhere right now, which is a good thing and a bad thing. And maybe I'm part of that problem. You know, I'm not above thinking that I am part of that problem, and that like I am, in comparison to a lot of people who have been doing this, like young in the game, is if you want to like use a term like that. I just, like I said, happen to get really schooled and am fortunate to, like, you know, able to kind of turn that into a business. And I've been told I have a good palate, and so I'm going to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And enjoy that. And I find it fun. I think it's fun. Like, I pay my bills making drinks for people, like, you know, write
that's
a song
cool.
or make a drink. Like I'm happy. Like, I think that's great. But I do think that it's sort of, you know, I mean, you know, you can draw a similar line to like what's happened in like DJing or like electronic music, where it's just like so overblown. It's like, dude, like the pot's going to tip over at some point, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's going to go back to just the most simple form.
And I think it's starting to go back to that. And I think that that's kind of cool as like a trend, is like, you know, there's a quirky trend of like, you know, like in the 80s and 90s, like cocktails were so bad. They're so bad. And now there's like a fun trend of like bars doing, remaking all those like bad quote unquote classics, but like thoughtfully.
Yeah.
And well presented.
Oh, and you go, it's, if we're talking about music again, I mean, you know, I'll go see a session and they have, you know, 40 plugins in there. In their session that just makes it sound like it's coming out of tape.
Right, exactly. You got to work so hard and there's like fake record hiss on the track. You know, it's like, guys, like, come on. You know, most people can tell the difference. Maybe no one's really listening, but like, yeah, you got to try so hard to make it sound so simple, you know? And like, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of music I like too. It's like old, simple, like, you think about like, yeah, like the just kind of old classic funk and soul music, like just like a rhythm section. Like you don't need a ton of instruments. You don't need a ton of things going on. They were probably recorded on a 4-track. Like,
I love that. Yeah. So as I said, like, you know, you go to those places with the 10 ingredient minimum cocktails.
Yeah, like I don't want to drink that.
Yeah, there's just too much. It's cluttered.
It's hard. Look, don't get me wrong. It's hard to do. It's hard to like balance those kind of things. But what's even harder is to put 3 or 4 things in a glass and make those taste good because every single ingredient has to shine.
Yeah.
That's way harder.
What do you take a shot of these days?
A shot of? Yeah,
someone wants a round of shots right now, and you're ordering. What are you getting them?
Oh, Fireball.
Really?
Just because it's fun. Because like because I can be that guy, and everyone's going to be like, wait. All right, well, yeah, Matt,
coming from you, that's
exactly,
awesome. Yeah.
Exactly, like Matt. Well, Matt's got to order the drinks for us, obviously. Like I get that all the time.
I'm sure you do.
It's like, all right, well, you want me to order the drinks? Fine. You're about to drink some Fireball.
Oh man.
No, but I mean, like, I have definitely done that to a lot of like
that's funny,
industry friends of mine. But no, I mean, if we're like going to take a shot, like I'll take a shot of mezcal. I really enjoy drinking mezcal way more. It's like, I don't want to take a shot of tequila. I'd much rather drink a shot of mezcal.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And then I did just spend a fair amount of time in Oaxaca, and it was amazing. Just
mezcal
totally
is
unbelievable.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Or whiskey. I've always been a whiskey guy from day one.
Mezcal is like the scotchy tequila. I mean, that's not really the way to describe it, but it's like it's a little smokier, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way they cook the piñas. So when it's cooked, you get that little bit of a cooked smoke flavor from it. So that's where that kind of a little bit of smoky note comes from, and it's just like different agave plants.
Right. I'm seeing that a lot more. I'm a lot more.
Yeah,
places.
It's really becoming pretty popular. It's still like a fairly young thing. You know, it's been made in Mexico for over 100 years, but really like still pretty young as far as U.S. is concerned. I mean, in California, we've seen it for a while just because of like our proximity to Mexico, but. You know, really starting to get across the country now. Like you see it all over the place, and like the bigger cities now, really, San Francisco and Chicago, New York, Miami, and now even like the middle of the country starting to really like jump on board because it's just delicious. And like, look, everyone likes tequila. I mean, not that long ago, tequila was really unknown. You know, same thing with like sushi. Like sushi is like wasn't that popular like 25 years ago, and now I mean it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, and that's sort of what happened to tequila, and now slowly like mezcal's doing that, you know.
Yeah, I'm seeing that more
and even
more.
Rum is having like a moment now, which I think is great because I think rum is super delicious.
Really?
And for a long time, like, no one really drank rum because I think like there was, you know, this sort of bastardization of of daiquiris and things like this.
Rum's probably the one I drink the least. What's the best way to drink rum?
I mean, you can start just like drinking it on its own.
Yeah,
there are
like
some
pirate,
really,
huh?
Really delicious drinking, you know, delicious dark rums out there. You know, if you go to like a really proper bar, like a really good bar, or like a lot of these fun tiki bars that are showing up now, you can definitely have some good rum drinks. You go to a real bar and get a real daiquiri, it's one of the greatest things in the world.
Like,
there's
sure.
Few things better than a properly made daiquiri, especially on a warm day like this.
Oh, yeah.
I want a daiquiri.
No, that actually does sound good. Sorry, I didn't have a couple daiquiris sitting here.
Time I come in, I'll make some for us.
I'd love that, man. Yeah. All right, let's talk about martinis. What's going on with martinis? How do you like yours?
Gin, dry vermouth, dash of orange bitters, up, lemon twist. See, that's the beautiful thing about a martini is like everyone wants it the way that they want it,
yeah.
Right? That's like one of the few drinks in the world where like, everyone's right, everyone's wrong. And that's so cool because, like, this thing is so iconic that, like, everybody knows what a martini is. And everyone who drinks martinis has their exact way that they like it and that is, to them, the best way. And they're right, right? It's not like when you're making a daiquiri, there's a a right or a wrong way potentially. I mean, you're not going to just like put random ingredients in it and still call it. I mean, some people will still call it daiquiri, or like maybe that's a bad example. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like maybe you like it with vodka, maybe I like it with gin, maybe you like it with olives, maybe I like it with lots of vermouth. Maybe you want, you know, who knows? You know, it's like you can kind of twist it so many different ways.
Yeah, and when you find the guy that makes your martini the way exactly you like it, you go back to him every time. If he's not working when you're there, you're not going to order one.
Like, straight up.
Yeah.
I like mine gin.
I prefer gin too.
A good amount of dry vermouth. Like I like it pretty wet. The secret that I really enjoy is a dash of orange bitters in it. Really plays really nicely with both the vermouth and the gin. That's actually technically the classic way to make it, is with a little bit of orange bitters. And then a lemon twist.
All right.
That's how I like my
martini. I'm going to get that next time I go out. Yeah, I'll try that. And I'll let you know.
I also just happen to really like vermouth, because I think vermouth is just yummy. There's also something that I like to drink.
I see a lot of places that don't use vermouth in their martinis.
Well, for a long time, it was this sort of like faux pas thing where it's like, you know, there's all the jokes about like just kind of like wave the bottle at the glass, or you know, have like the sunshine through it, or, you know, whatever it is. Like, you know, people just want like a stiff drink. So I was like, I just want like 4 ounces of gin, and that just sounds awful. Like that's just a
straight thing of gin.
Glass of gin. That's like, you know, unfortunately, unless it's made well, like probably not even that cold. Like who wants to drink like a glass of semi-warm gin? That's like when you have a problem, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That you're on a mission. You're not there to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And gin is kind of an acquired taste. That one.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of people don't like gin.
And yeah, I was one of those people for a really long time.
Alcohols out there, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, good gin martini, though. I don't know if I learned to like it or if I already did, but it's definitely an acquired taste,
and it's something that's just, like, time and place. It's just, like, so dry. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. And what else? What other drinks do you think people should be – you'd like to see in people's hands more often than not?
Oh, I mean, a daiquiri, dude.
Daiquiri.
Like, straight up, like a real proper rum, sugar, lime, no bullshit, no like frozen thing, no like other additives.
No pre-made stuff.
No, man, put rum and sugar and lime juice.
That's a daiquiri?
In a tin, shake the F out of it, and pour it in a really cold glass and give it to me, and I'm going to drink it in 2 seconds.
Oh, so it's not even, I'm thinking of like the blended strawberry, pineapple thing.
That's the problem. A daiquiri is just rum, sugar, and lime. That's it. So simple, right? But it's so hard. The less ingredients, the harder. Like I was saying, it's got to be good sugar. It's got to be fresh lime juice. It's got to be good rum.
I like that. I'm going to take your minimalist approach to my cocktails now. And yeah, because it's so clouded with all these other flavors that I'm not – yeah, I guess I really can't taste anything. And so it's so weird because that's everyone's goal, right? You can't even taste the alcohol now.
Like, right, and that's the problem. That's like the root of the problem, because like a real – well-made balanced drink should highlight what the base spirit is, not hide it. It's all of these other like ancillary flavors that are like boosting everything together. Well, let's go back to that whole team analysis, right? Where it's like, if there's, you know, if we're talking basketball, like you got 4 good players and 1 bad player, you're not trying to like hide the bad player, right?
Yeah.
Everyone should be working together to make the whole team better, as opposed to like the 4 guys making that one dude like, I just don't pass him the ball.
Yeah.
You know?
I was actually just listening to an interview with Kevin Durant where he said that, like, oh, we had, you know, JaVale McGee and we knew his strengths, and whenever he was on the floor, we played differently to accommodate what he was good at. And that included, and that's just everybody. Like whenever there's a player on the floor, like all 5 players would change what they did so they can highlight each other and make sure everybody is there doing what they need.
Yeah, and that's the same thing. That's exactly what different ingredients in a cocktail should do, where like everything is playing well off each other. This flavor works well with that one because of this one and that one and this, and like we're all taking this sort of the base spirit of it, because every drink's going to have one thing that has more of it than the others, right? We'll call that the base, except for like a Negroni, right, where it's all even. And then sort of raise everything up so they all taste beautifully together in, you know, in balance and harmony, right? It's like mixing down a track, right? Like
yeah.
The vocals are going to be up front because that's like the lead, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to push the drums a little bit because you want to like bump.
A little more backbeat. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe a little low end. But then like everything else is just kind of sitting there like holding and raising it up. So it's, you know, it's great.
I know that.
Not being hidden.
Yeah, I know that all too much now because we're mixing some stuff right now. So yeah, I totally get that. Yeah. So, you're a composer.
That's what love you are. It.
You're a
Thank
composer.
You. Thank you. Let it be known right here.
All right, Matt Siegel. Where can we go if anybody wants to like contact you on like social media or anything, website? Anything
yeah,
like
I
that?
Mean, I'll be honest. I gotta maybe be better about that stuff. I don't do a ton of social media stuff, and I know that that's like counterintuitive.
It's
I guess.
So hard. Like I can't.
I can't
it.
Keep up with a lot of it. I do. I mean, I do use Instagram. I'm just like not on it all the time. But it's just my name. It's Matt_Siegel SEIGEL on Instagram. And then like the way that I like to work, like I just like. I'll give people like my email address and just like, or my phone number and like, let's just chat and like work together. You know, like I don't have a fancy website. I don't like, I like to like have human yeah. connection.
Yeah. You don't need that middleman.
No. And look, I mean, some people might say that that's like a you know, prehistoric way of potentially doing business, but I'm very much like in the business of like people, right? I want to just like connect with people.
It's all coming back that way. Like same with drinks. So we're trying to be everything should start heading towards a more simplistic approach because there's just too many ways.
It's getting out of control.
Yeah.
You know, let's go back and like, yeah, let's put three ingredients in a glass and drink it.
So just call Matt. All right.
just give me a call. I'll give you my real phone number.
It's that easy. All right. So Matt Siegel, thank you so much for coming on Resume, man. Really appreciate
it's my pleasure to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
And we'll have you back. We do, Adam has a drink that he concocted called Mangria, which is like a wine with a little brandy in it, a fortified wine kind of thing. It's a high octane drink.
High octane
that we do
sangria.
Here.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like 21%. And
where do you guys make that?
We have a winery out here, Bianchi Winery that does it all for us. And,
cool.
They're cool. And I'll get you a bottle of it or something. Let me see.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll make my version of the Mangria.
The Mangria.
I'll make you guys a version next time I come. We'll drink some Mangria and some daiquiri.
Dude, I'm in, man.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm thirsty now.
Yeah.
I want a daiquiri. I want one of your daiquiris. So I want
go to like
that.
I'm telling you, go to a proper bar.
All right.
And order a daiquiri. And not only will the bartender be super happy to make it for you, you're gonna get something super delicious.
Really? What proper bar? Like you just know, huh? When you walk in, like any signs? Maybe like the ice is super clear.
Yeah, I mean, if you can tell by like. I don't know. There's certain things.
Sex ground.
Yeah. See where your friends like to go drink, or like you have a friend who's, like in that world, you can kind of tell. Or if it's like a tiki bar, which they're popping up all the time, like you would hope that the guy at the tiki bar knows how to make a daiquiri.
They better.
Yeah.
Or you're just gonna be a bar.
Yeah.
I'm removing tiki from the name.
Yeah. Or come find me. I'll make you Decker.
All right. There you go. So Matt Siegel on Resume. Thank you so much for coming in, man. And just a reminder to all those listening right now, if you click through the Amazon banner, whenever you buy anything, maybe a rum or maybe a daiquiri starter kit or something, anything on Amazon, just click through the banner, crystalloxamod.com. Doesn't cost you anything extra, but it does help keep the lights on here at Corolla Studios. And the music you're listening to right now is available on Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play. Just search Resume Podcast Theme and get it for your ringtone or send it to a friend. Whatever you want. Do whatever you want with it. It's yours. And that is it. So once again, this has been Resume for Matt Siegel. My name is Chris Loxamana. We'll let you know.
Peace.